Are you confused about real food and what's healthy and good for the planet? Do you need the facts about local, organic, and sustainable food? Well, get ready to change the way you eat. Get ready for The Appropriate Omnivore with Aaron Zober.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of The Appropriate Omnivore. I'm your host, Aaron Zober, covering lifestyles in the world of real food. In a couple weeks, the Weston A. Price Foundation will be holding its annual Wise Traditions Conference. This year, the conference takes place in Kansas City, Missouri, from October 20th to 22nd. I'll be interviewing a few of the speakers on the podcast for the next few weeks. My first Wise Traditions speaker is Corey Dunn. Corey is the Weston A. Price chapter co-leader in Brunswick, Georgia, and runs the blog For Nutrients' Sake. Corey's talk at the conference this year is entitled Nourish Your Family with Proper Foods Cooked Right, a topic I can very much relate to. Corey, welcome to the program.
Thanks so much, Aaron. I'm really excited to talk to you.
I'm excited to talk to you as well. I know that you've done your own podcast, so now you're on the opposite end of the microphone.
Yeah. Podcasting is a fun thing to do.
It is. So I'm glad to have you on because I've loved your blog, and I know that we do have a lot of similarities in terms of the things we cover, and your talk this year is very much up my alley and a lot of what the Appropriate Omnivore blog is about, as well as I know that it's a lot of what your blog is about and how you got all into this in the first place.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to this talk at the conference. I think it's a really necessary thing to talk about with the health sphere, people that are already in the health sphere. And I also think that it's important for what I call like the everyday person. So the people who are not necessarily in that same circle, but are living their lives. But also a lot of times those kinds of people want to be eating better and they just don't know how to. So that's where my talk is headed. And that's a lot of what I talk in my blog and my Instagram and all of that and our podcast too. So
yes, and we'll talk about the specifics of what your presentation is going to cover. But first, let's get into how you got involved with real food in the first place.
Okay. So I always say I grew up with a hippie mom. We were really into whole foods. I was homeschooled and we were in that homeschool real food arena back in the 80s and 90s. And I always tell the story that my mom bought Nourishing Traditions as soon as it was published because I grew up in Maryland and Sally Fallon obviously lives in Maryland, and it was being sold at a local health food store as a local author. And my mom just grabbed it off the shelf and it just got ingrained into our family. I definitely stepped away from that when I went to college. I looked at my mom as the weird hippie mom. And so, and you know, oh, well, everybody else is doing this. I'm going to just do what they're doing. Fast forward to when my second child was born and she developed eczema all over her body and it was just really awful. And I tried all of the things that our conventional pediatrician told me to do. I drew the line at steroids and my mother suggested I cut out dairy and gluten from her diet. And within a week of doing that, her body totally cleared up to the point where there was no sign of eczema anymore at all. And it just blew my mind. I knew from my own upbringing that food was important. What you eat is important. But I don't think I realized how directly it could be related to what your body was doing. I think I just had an idea that it was related to weight. Probably being a teenage girl in the early 2000s gives you that idea. But my kid was essentially healed and it just sent me down this huge rabbit trail of food as medicine. So we went paleo for about 5 years. And at about the 5-year mark, I was again pregnant with my third child and just overwhelmed with trying to make paleo work for our family because my husband hated it and it was a lot of work and it was really expensive. And so then my mom was like, hey, here's a copy of Nourishing Traditions. And I basically read it like a Jane Austen novel over Christmas break. And then I applied to be a chapter leader pretty much directly after that. And I just started incorporating all of the Nourishing Traditions things pretty quickly. So that's where I came from.
Nice. I like that story. So you went from paleo to more Nourishing Traditions. What are some of the foods that you added in after having read Nourishing Traditions from being on the paleo diet before?
Well, I started making properly fermented bread. So I didn't make sourdough because, like I said, I was pregnant at the time again and had 2 children already. And maintaining a sourdough starter didn't seem like something that was in my wheelhouse at that point. But I started sourcing raw milk and I started making buttermilk soaked bread. It's the same sort of idea as a sourdough with grains. And then I would take raw liver and slice it up into little tiny pill-sized chunks and freeze it. And then I would take that, and I was trying to start incorporating it into my family's diet. There's a learning curve that I didn't really master right away with organ meats. But yeah, I really tried to do all the things all at once and then realized that that was not really something I could handle. So I then backed off a little bit, stopped trying to be as ambitious as I was trying to be, and took a couple slower steps. But yeah, raw milk and properly prepared grains is probably the top of my list, especially since in paleo, there's no grains, there's no legumes, and there's no dairy. And so if I wanted to add those back into my diet, I wanted to do it in the most nutritionally beneficial way that I could. So yeah, that's kind of where we went.
I know for me, one of the biggest things that appealed to me about Weston A. Price when I first learned about it was the concept of properly prepared grains, because like you, at the time, the paleo diet was very popular. And the thing is, I love grains. I love sandwiches. I love burgers and desserts. And it was very appealing that the Weston A. Price Foundation talked about a way of preparing them well. Things like sprouted flour, sprouted grains. So not whole grains or whole wheat, but sprouted grain. And also sourdough bread, which I never knew there was health benefits to. I just thought it was yummy, but right. I didn't realize how actually it's very beneficial, as well as other things too, such as Weston Price talks about the concept of natural sweeteners. I never knew what whole cane sugar was, or that actually maple syrup and honey were better sweeteners for you. So was that something that appealed to you about the Weston A. Price Foundation when first learning about it?
Oh, yeah, 100%. The fact that I didn't feel like I had to be restrictive with my food anymore, I'm not even sure I could put terms on it. It's huge. Like I said, my mom was not one of those classic dieters of that 90s era, thank God. But in college, I had so much of that in my face. My roommate's mom was a Weight Watchers fan, and she worked for Weight Watchers. So my roommate was always like, oh, you know, this is only so many points or whatever. And that whole fat-free movement was such a big thing when I was growing up and when I was in college. And there was these bad foods and there was good foods, right? There's morally bad foods and morally good foods. And when I went paleo, I went whole 30 first, which is even more strict than just paleo, and then bumped back and forth between paleo and whole 30 for about 5 years there. And it's so restrictive. And I got to the point where I was struggling with orthorexia, which I did not even realize. And I was struggling with food having moral value. And to me, that's a just ridiculous thing. Because as somebody who's a Christian and who follows the biblical worldview, I believe that God has created this plethora of food to nourish us. So to put a morally bad stamp on grains, especially when there is so much in the Bible about grains and about bread, specifically grains and bread, and then honey and milk. And these are things that I'm not supposed to eat because I'm doing Whole 30, right? And so these are bad foods. It got to the point where I was obsessing, and that in and of itself is not a healthy place to be. So yeah, having a way to enjoy all foods and in the most nourishing and healthful way, and for me to be able to give my children access to all of these foods, at the time it was mind-blowing, and it was just huge. It was just so huge for me to be able to reincorporate all of those things and to do it in a way that is truly nourishing both body, mind, and spirit.
I was going to say, I imagine that the kids played a huge part too in adapting to the Wise Traditions diet through Weston A. Price. Sally Fallon has pointed out that these diets, such as paleo and keto, they're all invented by men and by people that don't have families to feed.
Yeah, that's interesting. I don't think I've ever heard her say that, but that resonates with me. When you're trying to feed kids, I did fairly well with my kids before they started going to school, and now we homeschool, so it's a different story, but in the early years, my kids were going to preschool and they went to kindergarten, and they were definitely influenced by their peers. And it was very difficult to control what they were eating and making sure that they felt socially accepted with the food that they were eating. My son would come home from kindergarten and say, well, why can't I have this food that my friend has? And he's very aware of that kind of thing and aware of the social situation, and he was upset by it. So to me, that was not acceptable to make him feel ostracized. There's a way you can talk to your kids about it, sure, whatever, but like, why put that stress on them? That's not necessary. Unless, obviously, there's allergies and exceptions to things. Some people actually don't do well on some of these foods. But in general, as long as we're preparing foods in a way that those foods should be prepared in, they can all be included.
Yes, and this leads very well into what your presentation will be about. During my intro, I explained the title of it is Nourish Your Family with Proper Foods Cooked Right. This is what you'll be speaking about at the Wise Traditions Conference in mid-October. So tell the listeners a little bit more of what your presentation will cover.
Okay, so let me tell you what my original title was for this, because I think that it's a little bit of a shocking title, which is why we workshopped it a little bit. But my original title was Nourishing Junk Food. And what I want to do is help people and maybe inspire people, encourage people to not X off foods from their list, right? Just because they are given that title of junk food or bad foods. I want people to be able to step back and look at these things and go, okay, I really love this particular food. I don't love how it makes me feel. So how can I recreate it in a way that makes me feel good, that nourishes my body? I have an example that I'll give you of my family. At every holiday, my grandmother makes this thing called green jello. And it's not just green jello. It is green jello with cottage cheese and those maraschino cherries on top of it. I don't know where this recipe came from, but my cousins and most of my family, I find it not delicious. I'm so sorry, Mimi. It's not my favorite thing, but everybody else in my family loves it. And I am looking at this going, okay, I don't want to eat this because of the food dye and some of the other ingredients that I know don't serve my body well. However, I can look at it and say, you know what? Gelatin is really nourishing. Cottage cheese is fine. Cherries in and of themselves are fine. So what can we do to this dish to change a couple of the ingredients and make this a nourishing dish?
Love it. I mean, that's what I look for when I go to these shows, discovering new products, is I feel like all these dishes that we love, we can find foods that were what we like, but with better ingredients.
Yeah, exactly.
How do people in the health sphere, in the Weston A. Price Foundation and other groups with similar ideologies in the health sphere in general, how do they react when you say that the junk food that we like, there's a better way to make it?
I think actually for people in the Weston A. Price community, in general, most of my friends are all on board. I think they're all like, yes, this is how I cook for my family. We make tacos all the time. We make sandwiches. We're eating regular American foods just made in a way that is nourishing. And I think that's pretty fairly normal. Maybe that's just my friend group. I don't know. I think it's actually more shocking for people who are not in the Weston A. Price community. I think that in general, when people find out that I'm a healthy mom or a crunchy mom or whatever title you want to put on that, it's almost like they apologize. Like, I'm not super healthy, or like, I know I could do better. And I just want to be like, let me just hug you and tell you you're doing great. And if you wanted to change a couple things here and there, all we're going to do is just change this ingredient and that ingredient, and the rest of it's all the same. Tacos are really actually a very nourishing food. It's ground beef, and it's some spices and some herbs, and it's cheese and vegetables and tortillas. None of those things are bad for you. It's just food.
I can see how people in the Weston A. Price and similar communities would be accepting of it, because what I see with a lot of what you're talking about is you make this food from scratch. So everything that goes into it, you know all of the ingredients.
Yeah, that is definitely true. And I think that that's probably the key to really nourishing food, is that you have as much control over it as possible. You don't have to make every single thing from scratch. I don't make every single thing from scratch. I have seasons where I make more from scratch and seasons where I make less. Right now, I have been buying taco spice blend because I found a good source for it, and it's just one less thing that I have to worry about doing. I just get a shipment every month and it's in my pantry. So I think the way to really ensure that you're getting as nutrient dense as possible is to make every single thing from scratch, but I don't think it's necessary that you have to.
As you've read my blog, and people have read my blog, know that I also don't think that it's necessary that you have to make everything from scratch either. And of course, I know that you are an advocate of some packaged goods, because you have that great segment in your blog and on your social media called Simple Swap, which is very similar to what I talk about in my blog with my best product lists. How did you come up with this idea?
I came up with it because all of my real life friends, almost all of them are always coming to me saying, hey, what brand of bread do you recommend? Or my kids are obsessed with ketchup, but I don't want them to eat the one that has all the corn syrup in it. What should I be buying them? And it kind of made it apparent to me, which this is kind of where my talk for the conference came from too, is my heart is really for the everyday mom, not the one in the health sphere, not the one who's already read Nourishing Traditions. My heart is for that mom who's going, okay, my kid's got constipation and I don't want to be giving them Miralax every day. What can I do? And that's a really hard place to be because so many of these women and fathers and non-parents as well, but my main goal is to reach moms, is so many of them from my generation of millennials did not learn to cook at all. And we just grew up on all of this processed food. And so they don't even know where to start. It's just incredibly overwhelming. So my goal with the Simple Swap is to say, okay, your kid eats mac and cheese and frozen nuggets at every meal. Fine. Okay. Let's find the best mac and cheese available. Let's find the best frozen nuggets available. And I'm not even saying, here's how to make homemade mac and cheese. Sure, I have recipes and stuff on my blog and on my social media. But with the Simple Swaps, the idea is to say, here is the best version you can buy at the grocery store. You don't have to start making your own ketchup. You can just go to the grocery store and instead of buying this bottle of ketchup, buy this one. It's to hopefully make it as easy and accessible that everyday shopper, that everyday person who is just wanting to make slightly better choices in their food. We just get this one ketchup without the high fructose corn syrup. We're at least cutting it out from that one section of our lives. And if we're buying this brand of frozen nugget, maybe those ones don't have fillers or whatever is in frozen nuggets, just to make that one step that's maybe helpful and make it a little bit more easy and a little bit more doable. Because what I see with my peers, with the mothers of young kids, we just are overwhelmed. We've got so much on our plate. There's this joke about how moms in the 80s could do whatever they wanted. It didn't matter, right? Nobody was judging you for what you were doing. Now, if you're not doing all the things, you're not a Pinterest mom and you're not all of this stuff, you're behind. You're failing your children. So I just want to try and make it a little bit easier.
I like how you address the difference between making it from scratch, which is a lot to do, especially for people that are just getting into it. It's not necessarily the way to start. And then you talk about how you can start by just buying better products in the supermarket, better prepackaged goods. So for me, when I do talk about making junk foods from scratch, I don't see too much pushback from the community, but I know, at least for me, I've seen some pushback in our community and like-minded nutrition groups when I have written articles such as the best sustainable snack food.
Right. I posted something about bread. I did a Simple Swap with bread, and I did one where I was like, you're used to buying this run-of-the-mill bread from the grocery store. Here's a good sourdough option to buy. It's in most health food grocery stores. You can probably find it in the frozen section. And then I did another one maybe a year later that was like, listen, if sourdough bread is not happening for you right now, here's an option of bread in the grocery store that doesn't have high fructose corn syrup and doesn't have industrial seed oils. And people lost their minds over that. I will say that they did not like that post because they're like, oh my gosh, how could you say that this bread is in any way comparable to the sourdough bread? And I'm going, listen, I don't care if it's comparable to the sourdough bread. I'm saying that in a pinch, if you're in a grocery store and you need sandwich bread for your kid's lunch the next day and you can't make sourdough or you can't get to a artisan bakery before lunch the next day, it's okay. Buy this one. It doesn't have inflammatory seed oils and it doesn't have high fructose corn syrup.
I remember reading that, and there's a lot that I can relate to it because I'm fortunate that in Los Angeles, there are so many sourdough breads. I actually wrote an article years ago based on Sally Fallon saying she had trouble finding organic sourdough bread, and now I believe I found about 20 or 30 sourdough breads in Los Angeles. A lot of them in farmers markets, but we even have some supermarkets that you can find them in. And I recall, did you also do one about hamburger or hot dog buns and saying it's hard to find good hamburger hot dog buns in the supermarket?
Oh my gosh, I've never found good hamburger hot dog buns in a supermarket. Never. If we do hamburger hot dog buns, I have to make them or I'll buy them from somebody that ships. There's not even a local baker that'll make them. Not where I live.
They're very hard to find. Even where I live, they're very rare. There are a couple bakers that do them, and then there is this one supermarket known as Erewhon, which is just this beyond amazing natural supermarket. Higher standards pretty much than all of the others. They have organic hot dog bun and organic hamburger bun. And not just are their buns great because they're organic, but what I also love about them, because I found a few organic hamburger hot dog buns, but there's often the problem of them containing canola oil.
Right.
And these buns contain none of that. So it contains all perfect ingredients, but it's only one. It's a bit expensive, and I understand that a lot of cities don't have it. When I read your article, I said, well, I'm fortunate in LA that there is one supermarket that has this, but yes, I certainly get how so many they don't have that in other cities. Even in LA, it's a novelty.
No, I've never seen a good option for those in a supermarket. There's a company that ship that I can order from, but even so, I actually have got hamburger buns that I'm working on that are fermenting right now on my counter because there's no other way. If I don't make them, I'm just going to serve hamburgers with lettuce, a lettuce wrap, because it's so hard to find a good bun.
Which company is that that ships?
Organic Bread of Heaven.
Ooh, okay. I'll have to look into that one.
Yeah, they have great sourdough tortillas. They have challah. They have really great foods available and that they ship and they make them fresh and then they freeze it and they ship it. So it's a really great company, but it's more expensive. And if you buy a certain amount of food, they'll ship it for free, but then you're stuck with all of this food. So I usually buy a bunch of tortillas mostly and freeze them. I don't know. For some reason, tortillas, I'll make them, but it feels like a lot of work to me to make tortillas. So I'd rather just buy them from Organic Bread of Heaven and have them stocked in my freezer.
Another criticism that I did get for the hamburger and hot dog buns that I posted, which these were all organic, no seed oils in them, but I know I got a criticism that it wasn't sourdough, it was baker's yeast used in them, but I still say that as a compromise food, and if you're doing the 80-20, to have an organic hamburger hot dog bun with no seed oils is fine when you want to have just the traditional burger or hot dog.
Yeah, I think so. I think that there are people who really have issues with grains. I know my daughter for a long time after we cut gluten from her diet, she was gluten-free for about 5 years, and then we realized she could handle sourdough and properly prepared organic wheat. And then only within the last year or so has she been able to handle not properly prepared wheat, and she turned 10 this summer. There are people who have issues with non-sourdough or non-soaked grains, but in general, I think that people can often handle the grain in small amounts without it being really an issue. But again, it's a bioindividuality thing, right? If it bothers you, then stick to sourdough. Just don't buy the bun. Not that big of a deal.
Certainly, I would never recommend these organic hamburger buns or even the organic sourdough buns or breads to people that do have issues with grains and with gluten. I certainly understand that for a lot of people, that is a serious concern.
Yeah, for sure.
And so we've talked a bit about these packaged foods that you find in the supermarkets, which are better versions of our comfort foods. Do you think that people who begin their journey by eating better versions of these foods, it's then a gateway for them wanting to be more interested in consuming whole foods?
I don't see it as a gateway, and here's why. I don't think eating a hamburger that's just been made with organic beef and a sourdough bun is a starting point. I think that that is a normal food. I don't think that it needs to be seen as something special. I think that these are whole foods for the most part. I talked about the tacos, hamburgers, and they're cultural foods for most Americans. We grew up eating these foods. They're familiar, they're comforting. They're ingrained in our culture. I don't think that they need to be looked at as a stepping stone. I think they need to be looked at as a normal food. Just how do we make them in a way that is as nourishing as possible? I think actually the health community needs to shift our focus. We need to try hard to recognize whole foods in all forms as good, as nourishing. It's not that we have to eat a plate of raw tartar with egg yolks. Not that that's a bad thing to do, but when we put out, especially on social media, if I were to post things like all of this raw meat or things that look weird to the normal American, that's, I think, where the problem is. I think that that turns people away. And I think that we have in our hearts a desire for people to be healthy, for our country to be healthy, we need to be making these foods as accessible and normal as possible. And to do that, that taking things like hamburgers and saying, hey, look, we have hamburgers once a week, or my family, we eat pizza regularly. My kid just had a birthday party at my house and I just made sourdough pizzas for the whole group. And it was great. Half the kids were like, this is the best pizza I've ever eaten. Like, yeah, it's just normal food though. Just pizza. He had a pool party and we had pizza and we had ice cream.
I think those are good points that you bring up. So you've talked a little bit about the pizzas and burgers and tacos that you made. What are some of the other favorite comfort foods you like to make?
I love to cook. And I love to experiment in my kitchen. Yeah, pizzas, I love burgers, we love tacos, nachos. I'm a big fan of nachos. I think some of the sweets are really fun. My daughter really loves to bake, and so she gets to bake something. Usually she makes something once a week, and sometimes it's not always baking, but it's almost always sweet. She makes Pop-Tarts or ice cream. We make cinnamon rolls, cake. I'm really at the point where I'm just going, sure, whatever you want, we'll figure out how to make it.
And with raising 4 kids, how often do you make these kind of foods, say, per week?
Yeah, we're making these foods all the time. This is just totally normal in our house. It's just normal food. We have pizza regularly. We have burgers regularly. We have tacos, nachos, fried rice. It's almost hard for me to even think through all of the normal American foods sometimes because I'm like, yeah, we just eat those.
I love that, if just people could look at it more like that.
Yeah, I think that's really important. And I think that when people look at foods exclusively as fuel and as medicine, you have to divorce yourself from the other realities of food. Food is not just nourishment. It is not just fuel. It is not just medicine. It is also culture. It is also memories. It is also comfort. It is all of these things and community and so many different aspects. And we can't divorce these things from each other. They're all wrapped up. So we need to be able to look at the foods that we're eating and go, you know what? It's just food. And I'm going to learn how to incorporate it into my life in a way that nourishes me in my soul, in my community. It's going to nourish the ground that it comes from. It's going to nourish the body that it's feeding. It's going to nourish the brain that it is fueling. It's going to nourish the soul that it is connecting with. We're going to sit around the table and all have a beautiful time together. These are all aspects of food, and we need to be able to embrace all of that together.
As you've talked about your own healing journey and going from paleo to then properly prepared grains, as well as we see that with a lot of the foods we're talking about, burgers and pizzas. Mm-hmm. So obviously with you, you learned that you don't need to be afraid of grains. Do you think in the health community we're beginning to understand more the importance of how grains are okay if they're properly prepared?
Yeah, I really hope so. I think that there is maybe a shift happening where we're not demonizing grains and carbs as much as we were maybe couple years ago. Yeah, I really hope that there's more of that coming, where people are starting to realize that grains are not the bad guy, carbs are not the bad guy, that all foods can be incorporated into a well-balanced diet, and that these are all on the table, so to speak.
I certainly hope so too. I should say that I know that has started of grains being more accepted. A big turning point I saw was when Paul Jebenet, who wrote The Perfect Health Diet, talked about how it could be okay to consume some white rice, because I believe that Paul Jebenet was involved very much with the paleo community, and I know there was some acceptance of that. The thing is, that was a start, of course. Rice, that's still a gluten-free grain, and I've been saying how people should understand that very much how rice should be feared if it's properly prepared. Sourdough bread is very much the same way, where it's a proper way to prepare wheat.
Right. So when we first went paleo, one of the reasons that I decided to just go full on paleo was because I was having reactions to rice. My daughter was having reactions to gluten. My son was having reactions to dairy. So we were all having these reactions to these things, and come to find out that it really was just that I was buying really cheap rice because I didn't have a lot of money at the time. And it's high in arsenic, or the wheat is high in glyphosate if it's not organic. And the dairy, which I was not buying raw dairy at the time, my son who has a lactose intolerance was not able to digest it because it didn't have the enzymes that helped with that. So these are all things that if we were growing things the way we should be growing them, or if we were treating these grains or these dairy products the way we should be treating them, they are wonderfully healthful food. I didn't know that at the time. So, but yeah, I think that there is hopefully a shift happening. Hopefully we'll get there. And I think that telling people that they have to cut out grains from their lives is an impossible task. But telling people this is how we eat grains in a way that our bodies can digest them and our bodies can access the nutrients within these grains, I think that's so much more powerful than saying, no, you can never have a piece of bread again, or you can only have a gluten-free piece of bread.
I would completely agree with that. As I've stated before, that's why I got involved with Weston Price. I'm not a big fan of any diet that tells you to exclude certain ingredients, whether it be exclude meat, exclude grains, or anything else.
Yeah, I agree. I think there's so much more freedom too in being able to say, oh, this is a whole food, beautiful food, and this is how I'm going to work it into my diet. I like it, makes me feel good, I enjoy cooking it. These are all good things.
I also like how you brought up earlier about the issue of glyphosate in wheat and how that may be the reason that a lot of people can't tolerate it, because I know of an organic pizza dough company that they explained that that was the reason that they had problem digesting wheat. It was not the hybridization or the gluten, but it was the glyphosate in wheat. And once they switched to organic wheat, it wasn't a problem anymore.
Oh, for sure. All of the stories of people who go to Europe who have an issue with gluten in the States, and then they go to Europe and they can eat as much pasta as they want to in Italy. That right there is enough evidence for me.
Yes, the pasta in Italy, which I know a lot of it is made from scratch, and they make new pasta each day as well as their breads. Or I'll bring up how in France, they eat lots of bread.
Oh, yeah. I studied abroad in France, and bread was served with every meal. And it was white bread, you know, just like French bread. But they have different growing practices in France, and they have different standards for their bread products.
In terms of the wheat products you make, is it typically with white flour, or do you use more of a multigrain?
I have recently, within the past couple of years, gotten into home milling. And so I mill my own grain almost exclusively. If I'm making bread or baked goods for other people, I'll usually buy a organic white flour, just because a whole grain, like fully whole grain bread product, is denser, and oftentimes children are not as inclined to enjoy it. So I look at that as, if I'm blessing somebody else with food, I want them to be able to eat it, and I want their kids to eat it. I don't want them to have stress of having to then also make their kids a turkey sandwich or something. But for my family, I'm using organic wheat or spelt or kamut or einkorn or whatever I'm making, and I'm going to mill it pretty much fresh, and then we'll make sourdough or whatever else.
I can certainly understand for friends and their families to make it with white flour when you want to introduce it to them, but certainly when you make it for your own family, that's different. And in regards to sourdough baking, I know that became very popular during the pandemic. I'm not sure if it still is, but the thing I wonder is, for people who made it during the pandemic, do you think that they truly learned about the benefits of sourdough, or was it more just they got into it because it was trendy and they like the taste, but they don't really know all of what sourdough is about?
Yeah, I think it's the latter. And I think there's probably some people that got into it. I think even though before the pandemic, because I started making sourdough before the pandemic, before it was cool. I also homeschooled before it was cool. But I think that there were people before that were just making it for artists and experience, because I was in some Facebook groups when I was trying to learn how to make it. I was trying to learn how to make it because my daughter tolerated it, and I was at that point rather desperate to have bread. And I was trying to figure out how to make it as long fermented as possible. So I was trying to make a 72-hour fermented loaf of bread. And I was asking on some of these Facebook groups, how do I do this to break down the grain as much? And I had so many people saying, well, why would you want to do that? Just make it this way so that it makes a beautiful loaf. And I'm like, I'm not here for the beautiful loaf. That would be a benefit, but that's not my goal. So I think that there's definitely people that are making sourdough are probably exposed to the idea that it's better for you. But I don't think that most people who started making it during the pandemic were in it for the nutritional value. I think they were probably just bored. I actually remember during the pandemic, I was really frustrated with that whole situation. I was like, why are you guys doing this? You don't care about the nutritional value. And all of the good flour was sold out in the grocery stores and I couldn't get any and I didn't have a mill at that point. And I just remember being really frustrated because I was going, I need this for my family. You don't need it. You just want to do it because you're bored.
Unfortunately, I would say it's probably also the latter. I fear that a lot of people just did it because it's trendy and not aware of the health benefits of it or about how it's an old tradition. But I do wonder, perhaps, if people still like the taste of sourdough bread, if we could start from there and then explain to them why what they love to eat is actually better for their health.
Yeah, I think so. There's a author in the UK, Vanessa Kemble, who wrote one of my favorite sourdough books. It's called The Sourdough School. And she has a couple of books on that same topic. And she is obsessed with the health benefits of sourdough. And so much of her book is dedicated to the health benefits of sourdough and the health benefits of grains in general. And most of the sourdough cookbooks that I have that similar thread through them, where they're talking about the health benefits and breaking down the grain through the sourdough process releases these nutrients that are stored in the grain that are inaccessible without this process, and how it's this beautiful ancient tradition. And one of the things that I think is so cool about sourdough is because it is such an ancient tradition, it's been happening forever and in all these different cultures. All these different cultures have their different ways of doing it. And when I was learning how to make sourdough, that was so freeing to me when I realized that, because it just made me go, oh, if all of these different cultures and all of these different people from all of these generations and generations have been making this sacred food in different ways, then who's to say that what I'm doing is the wrong way to do it? I found a way that works for me and my family enjoys it and we can make it fit into our lives. Then that's it. That's perfect. That's how I make sourdough.
As you talk about all these different foods that you've made for your family, I have to say the one that's closest to my heart are the burgers, because I've just loved burgers since I was a kid. I just think that the burger is like, can you find a more perfect food than a great hamburger or cheeseburger? So I'd love to hear everything that you include in your burger that you make.
I'm going to agree with you on this. I think every time my husband and I go out to dinner, we almost always get a burger. Even if it's like a really fancy restaurant, we're both drawn to the burger on the list.
Oh, yes. Sounds very much like me as well.
It's almost a shame because we'll be at this restaurant and they're like, special of the day, fresh caught from the ocean out our back door or whatever. And we're like, we'll just take the burger. But he's more adventurous with his burger. I love a good solid bacon cheeseburger. Sometimes I'll throw on some avocado, but sometimes I'm like, give me pickles, lettuce, tomato, and hamburger with cheddar and avocado. I guess I'm a purist with it. He's the one that's like, I want blue cheese and I want all these different things, but I just like the basic.
Right. And of course, all those things though that you put on yours, you put probably source would be a sourdough bun and local veggies, grass-fed beef, grass-fed cheddar.
Yes. We're growing most of our veggies. We have a guy that's literally right up the road that we get beef from. I make the buns. If we have buns, like I said, I oftentimes just don't because it just feels like a lot of work. But if it works, if I'm feeling ambitious, I'll make buns. Yeah, I'm not making condiments at this point. I have done that in the past. But like I said, at this point, I'm outsourcing that one. I'm outsourcing the cheese. Not in my wheelhouse to make cheddar cheese at this point. Maybe that's a future endeavor, but not right now.
And do the kids usually go for the cheddar cheese over the American cheese?
My kids actually would rather not have cheese on a burger.
Oh, interesting.
I know. I'm a little disappointed in them.
Oh, me too. In regards to American cheese, I've normally been always against it. I've said, oh, come on. You can just take the time to melt the cheddar. However, I do have to say, Organic Valley, they introduced me to their American cheese, and it does not taste like any other American cheese I have. So if you're looking for American cheese, and especially with me because I love to experiment with different recipes and some of them call for the American, I will recommend the Organic Valley American cheese.
Okay, so this is interesting because in my talk that I'm doing at the conference, I did a lot of research on burgers, and I did not realize that American cheese could be made with good ingredients. I will be completely honest. I just assumed that that was a industrialized food that was on the list of probably can't be done.
Oh, I hadn't thought so either. I'm with you there.
I'm going to have to look that up. We don't have Organic Valley. I have not seen that in a store out here. But I'll go on their website and do a little snooping.
It goes back to, I think, what you were saying about how some of these people said this is the best pizza I ever had. George Motz, who has a burger cookbook, he just updated it. I just purchased it. And in his book, he actually talks about the Organic Valley American cheese. So it's not just that it has better ingredients in it, but it's being praised by the burger experts.
Oh, good to know. I've never liked American cheese, not in my entire life. So it's not even really been something that I would consider needing on a burger. But if it can be made in a good way, great. That's awesome.
Yes, the Organic Valley, that's really the only American cheese I will get. You're talking about you get some condiments that you include on your burgers. Which brands do you like?
I buy a lot of stuff through Azure Standard because they just have really good prices and they have a pickup system. So you go once a month and pick it up. Since we moved to Georgia, we don't have access to the same stuff in the grocery stores that we did in Maryland. But Primal Kitchen, they have ketchup that I'll buy and sometimes the barbecue sauce that I'll buy from them. And I can find those in a couple of the grocery stores down here. My family doesn't really do mayonnaise very often, so that's not really even on my radar. But I know Primal Kitchens has one that's not terrible.
I'm not so big on mustard on a burger.
Oh, yes. I buy mustard from Azure Standard, and I personally don't love condiments on a burger. I know most people do. My kids like ketchup and mustard on burgers, and I could see people say that it's dry and it needs to have some extra moisture from the condiments, but personally, I don't love that.
Some people say ketchup on a burger, mustard on a hot dog. I like both on both, although actually, for burgers, I prefer more of a special sauce, or I actually do like mayo, but not regular mayo. Speaking of Primal Kitchen, I really like their chipotle mayo on a burger because, well, I do like my burger a bit spicy.
Oh, yeah, that actually sounds decent. I'll take the spicy stuff. There's one that we make sometimes. It's a sriracha. If I make meatloaf, we'll do a sriracha glaze on it with a blend of ketchup and sriracha and some coconut sugar. I actually have to make two different meatloaves because my kids don't like the one with sriracha because it's too spicy, but my husband and I will eat the one with the sriracha glaze on it.
For burgers, I know another thing that I like on it, and it's important to choose the right thing, are pickles. So of course, with making a burger, I always make sure that I have a truly lacto-fermented pickle, not the vinegar-based shelf-stable pickles.
Yes. Truth be told, almost always I'm buying Bubby's. We had a bumper crop of pickles this year, and I was not willing to lacto-ferment them because I was a little bit worried that I was going to ruin my pickles. So I made some vinegar-based pickles for my family with the pickles that we grew, and I'm fine with that. That's one of those points where I'm not a purist. We have sauerkraut that I lacto-ferment that we eat with almost every meal. So if I'm having a vinegar-based pickle that I've homemade, it doesn't bother me.
I have made vinegar-based pickles from time to time. When you do them, do you use just a distilled vinegar or do you use a raw apple cider vinegar?
Yeah, I use the apple cider.
Okay, yeah. And there is actually a difference between that of certainly using a distilled pasteurized vinegar versus a raw apple cider vinegar. That, too, does have a lot of health advantages because
there are
many great benefits of a good raw apple cider vinegar.
Yeah, and that's kind of where I land on that one, too. On our podcast, we have this thing that we talk about often that's called our family food values. And we talk about how you and your spouse or your partner, whoever is involved in the food in your house, need to sit down and figure out what your values are, what you're willing to spend money on, what you're willing to spend time on, and where you're willing to make compromises. And I think that pickles made from the cucumbers that we have grown and made with organic apple cider vinegar totally fit within my food values.
Mine too. You talked a little bit earlier about the meatloaf, so I just want to get that a little bit. Do you do an Oregon meatloaf?
Most of the time I do, yeah. We process our own chickens, and so I have plenty of chicken organ meats in my freezer. And so oftentimes I will have those already made into a pate that I can just pull out of my freezer and add to burgers or meatloaf or whatever. I'm not often grinding up organs to add to something fresh. Again, I have a lot on my plate and I'm trying to make food as sustainable for myself as possible and doable in my everyday life. So any of those little hacks that I can do, I'm going to do them.
Lovely. So you talked about how you process your own chickens as well as Miliero grains. And I know that in addition to doing the blog, you are a homesteader. Tell us a little more about that.
Yeah, so we moved to coastal Georgia last year. We bought land and was not set up for animals or homesteading at all. In fact, there is literally no soil here. We don't have sandy soil. We just have sand. And this is a completely different climate than my husband and I grew up with. We're both from that Washington, D.C. area of Maryland. That's where we both grew up. So it's completely not what we are used to. But this is actually something that my husband wanted to do, which is fascinating because he is the one that grew up on super processed foods. And in a neighborhood, I grew up on a goat farm. So I had a little bit of a more agricultural background. It was hobby goats. We weren't doing anything with the goats aside from petting them. But my husband has always wanted to be a country boy. And so a couple of years ago, through the Weston A. Price chapter that I led up in Maryland, my husband hooked up with some people who were processing chickens and pigs, and he would go help them. And he came home at some point and was like, I want to do this. And I said, you're crazy. I don't need to add anything to my plate. I already have four kids. We're homeschooling. I have my blog stuff. We don't need to add another thing. He works full time. It just seemed like a crazy idea to me. And then I slowly came around to it. And we started looking during the pandemic. I think everybody had their minds shift a little bit. And I realized that I wanted this lifestyle and we aligned on that. And we both decided to move forward with it and ended up in coastal Georgia because this is where my parents live. And now we have chickens in our freezer. We have layers in the yard. We have two hogs. We have a garden. We have an orchard that is years probably away from producing anything. But it's this crazy adventure that I literally never saw my life taking. And we are figuring it out one Google search at a time. And there's been really hard parts. There have been really great parts. We're only about a year and a half into it. But yeah, it's something that, like I said, I never saw myself here, but I'm really, really glad I'm here now and that this is how we're raising our kids. This is where we're building our lives. It's been really great for my husband and I. We've bonded in ways that we've did. The other day, we had to rescue our pigs from the woods. Their pasture had flooded. We had them in the woods and their pasture flooded. So we're both out there up to our mid-thighs with water trying to pull these pigs out. Yeah, it's an adventure.
It is.
Our goal is to do as much as we can, but also connect with our local community. That's where we're at with the homesteading.
It's a new adventure that I'm sure will lead to lots of exciting places. We're just about out of time, but before we go, tell listeners where they can go online to learn more about you and your blog.
Yeah, okay. So I am mostly active on Instagram. And that's at For Nutrients Sake. And then the blog is under the same title. So it's fornutrientssake.com. Like I said, I don't post there as much as I should, but Instagram is really where I'm most at. I should be getting more stuff up on the blog soon because I'm working on some resources that will be available there. My podcast is called Modern Ancestral Mamas. You can find that where you get podcasts.
Well, that sounds great. I look forward to seeing your future posts on Instagram, including more simple swaps. And I look forward to seeing your talk at the Wise Traditions Conference in a couple weeks. Thank you so much for coming on the program.
Thank you, Aaron. I really enjoyed it.
I enjoyed it too. That's all for this episode of The Appropriate Omnivore. New episodes of the show are released every Wednesday. Follow me on social media for more information on the next episode. And to make sure you never miss any of my podcasts, subscribe to The Appropriate Omnivore on your favorite podcast site or app. You can also listen to all my podcasts on my website, appropriateomnivore.com. There you can find recipes from the guests I interview, plus all of my articles covering lifestyles in the world of real food. Until next time, my pantry is officially closed.